move the board. Someone get up. Move this. Nijagraha. Sufficiently punished. Ojasa. By prowess. Vidaha. Valiant hero. Kalim. Unto Kali, the master of the age. Digvijahi. On his way to conquer the world.
On his way to conquer the world.
Kvachit.
Kvachit.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Nripalingadharam.
Nripalingadharam.
One who passes in the dress of a king.
One who passes in the dress of a king.
Shudram.
Shudram.
The lower class.
The lower class.
Ghanantam.
Ghanantam.
Hurting. Gom hitunanam. A cow and bull.
Cow and bull.
Padha.
Padha.
On the leg.
On the leg.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Once when Maharaj Parikshit was on his way to conquer the world, he saw the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a Shudra, disguised as a king and hurting the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once caught hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. Purport. The purport of a king's going out to conquer the world is not for self-aggrandizement. Maharaj Parikshit went out to conquer the world after his ascendance to the throne. But this was not for the purpose of aggression on other states. He was the emperor of the world, and all small states were already under his regime. His purpose in going out was to see how things were going on in terms of the godly state. The king, being the representative of the Lord, has to execute the will of the Lord duly. There is no question of self-aggrandizement. Thus, as soon as Maharaj Parikshit saw that a lower-class man in the dress of a king was hurting the legs of a cow and a bull, at once he arrested and punished him. The king cannot tolerate insults to the most important animal, the cow, nor can he tolerate disrespect for the most important man, the Brahmana. Human civilization means to advance the cause of Brahminical culture, and to maintain it, cow protection is essential. There is a miracle in milk, for it contains all the necessary vitamins to sustain human physiological conditions. Astonished to see that a black Shudra, dressed like a ruler, was mistreating a cow, the most important animal in human society. The age of Kali being mismanagement means mismanagement and quarrel. And the root cause of all mismanagement and quarrel is that worthless men with the modes of lower class men who have no higher ambition in life come to the helm of the state management. Such men at the post of a king are sure to first hurt the cow in the Brahminical culture, thereby pushing all society towards hell. Maharaj Parikshit, trained as he was, got the scent of this root cause of all quarrel in the world. Thus, he wanted to stop it in the very beginning. Here is a description of the days that we are now living in. There's not one Kali, but there are an unlimited number of expanded Kalis, many Kalis, all over the world, who have taken charge of the government. But where is Maharaj Parikshit? Kali is present, but where is Parikshit Maharaj? And without Parikshit Maharaj, where is peace? Where is any semblance of sanity? It doesn't exist. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagivyu padrutaha. This is already foretold. The symptoms of Kali is that people will be short-lived and misguided and unfortunate in every respect. And the beginning of it is identified here, namely the destruction of Brahminical culture. Without a head, society will automatically go berserk. Without a head, a human body is not a human body. What is the meaning of human life if there's no intelligence to guide it? And real intelligence means to search out the cause of all causes, not simply to manipulate material energy. The present society simply is interested in manipulating material energy, just like now we're living in the information age. But what is that information which is being disseminated? It is how to become a bigger animal. At least most of the information is on that level. Even if you say that persons who are more sophisticated are interested in more elevated topics, like what? You know, art. But what is the art depicting? Naked women. You know, the beauty of the naked body. Or what does film depict? Again, the same type of beauty. So even if it appears to be education, not, it is really not education. You go to a major university today, which are the departments which are most well-funded? Business schools and law schools. Business schools and law schools. And if medical institutions are doing a brisk business, it's because they are a business. It is because they are a business. So many persons go into the medical profession because it is profitable. So this is not to say that there are not genuine lawyers, genuine businessmen, and genuine doctors, but it is only to say that the dollar has become holy. And we don't trust in God any longer, although it's stated on the dollar bill. We trust in that dollar bill. You know, and if God gives us more of those dollar bills, we may decide to trust Him. Otherwise, what's the use? Just like Prabhupada said, you know, the German ladies prayed to God to bring back their men from the Second World War, and when the men didn't come back, they stopped trusting in God. So this kind of conception of God as a supplier of one's desires, a fulfiller of one's desires, you know, is the exact opposite of what bhakti is. Bhakti means you fulfill God's desires. Rishikesha Rishikenam Bhaktir Uchite. You serve the senses of Krishna. You don't demand Krishna to serve your senses. Exact opposite. And Kali and Maharaj Parikshit are practically exact opposites. One is the representative of Dharma and the other is the representative of our Dharma. Irreligion. And we know, yada yada hi dharmasya kulani bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sajami aham. Krishna descends at the time when there is a rise of irreligion. So in this age, Krishna has descended. Krishna varna tvisha krishna kasango pangasta parshadam yajnai sankirtanai prayer yajanti hi sumedasharam. This is the time for the performance of sankirtan yajna. Those who are blessed with sufficient brain substance will worship the Krishna who has come in an Akrishna form. He doesn't look like Krishna, but he's Krishna. He's Krishna in every respect, including his own potency, Srimati Radharani. That is Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Radha and Krishna have combined together in this one beautiful form as Sri Gauranga Dev. So those who are intelligent, who have sufficient brain substance, and brain substance, you know, is not demonstrated simply by increasing bank accounts. Brain substance is not demonstrated by increasing the power of a nation. Brain substance are demonstrated by knowing what the purpose of human life is. That is, you know, truly advancement, Aryan. Aryan means one who knows the purpose of human life. But this society is un-Aryan. It is not unable to understand what is the purpose of life. And therefore, it is a society of sophisticated animals. Sophisticated animalism. Nothing more. Prabhupada condemned the civilization. He said that, you know, he compared the skyscrapers to anthills. And he compared the motor cars to four-legged dog races. And that's how much importance. That is the level to which Prabhupada reduced the so-called advancement of civilization. We judge the advancement of a particular city. Oh, this city is very important because it has so many skyscrapers and it has so many cars. Prabhupada said so many anthills and so many dogs racing on four wheels. This is Kali's vision. Kali's vision is skyscrapers, you know, and automobiles. And I always quote Prabhupada on the Santa Monica Freeway in Los Angeles, you know, in the middle of a traffic jam, sitting back in the car, and he turned to me and he said, "Simply sex." You know, and I looked around and said, Where? And Prabhupada said, "Everywhere. This is all simply sex." I said, What? Prabhupada said, "All these skyscrapers and automobiles. Simply sex. That is the only purpose for which all of this has been developed, simply for sex. Take out that one factor of sex life, and no one would bother. All the BMWs, all the Mercedes would all be sent back to Europe. And all of the skyscrapers would be empty. There'd be no reason to do business without this impetus of sex. Therefore, it is said it is sex that makes the world go round. Isn't that what it says? No, it says it's love that makes the world go round. But it isn't love. Because that's not what sex is. Sex is a very basic animal necessity. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Every single animal does it. You know, if you want to talk about animals loving, well, you know, that's debatable. If they can actually, if they're capable of such an elevated emotion as love. In fact, it is hard to find any human being that is at this point capable of such an elevated emotion as love. Because what is love? The word in Sanskrit is prema. And prema is not easy to get. You know, from getting to the point of prema is the fulfillment of many, 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 many lifetimes of tapasya. And animals generally don't do tapasya. And as far as human beings go, their austerity is not tapasya. You know, when Lord Brahma heard those two syllables, ta, pa, he didn't go to the office and start, you know, putting in 16 hours a day and saying, "This is my tapasya." He didn't, you know, work out for 4 years to make himself a gold medalist at the Atlanta Olympics. What did he understand by the meaning of ta, pa? He understood that this means spiritual austerity. For a spiritual goal. No doubt, human beings work very hard, but for what goal? Just simply for sex. Real austerity means that austerity which Krishna akarshani, which attracts Krishna. That is the quality of prema, prema bhakti. It attracts God. Don't think that God is going to waste his time, you know, taking note of your gold medal at the Atlanta Olympics. You know, they can play every national anthem in the world, and God may not hear it. But as soon as you chant, you know, the Krishna anthem, the Hare Krishna mantra, immediately Krishna's ears perk up. God hears. But we have to know how to attack Krishna, and there is only one way, by prema bhakti. by bhakti. Bhakti means eventually to come to the point of love of God. Prabhupada said, what is the definition of religion? A religion is that which teaches you how to love God. If it doesn't do that, it's not religion. It may be so many types of superfluous, you know, mode of goodness, actions, commandments, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that, and these are all the beginnings, which are important to get to the point of human life. Just like Prabhupada said, don't eat meat, fish, or eggs, don't gamble, don't intake intoxication, don't intoxicate, and don't have illicit sex. It means be a human. So that's what that means. That just means be human. That doesn't mean how to love God. There are lots of people who follow those four principles in India that don't yet have love of God. That's just human life. Now, beyond that, we have to come to the stage of Brahman. Brahman means one who knows Brahman. Brahman means the absolute truth, Parabrahman. And that Parabrahman is Sri Krishna. If you don't come to the point of knowing Krishna, you have not fulfilled the purpose of human life. Now, how to come to that point, that requires, you know, a whole process. We call that sadhana bhakti, practicing. To come to the point of prema is a long, 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 hard, arduous road. For which, in each age, there's a recommended system. And in this age, the recommended system is the Sankirtan Yajna, worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, we are pushing everyone so hard on Sankirtan. Because it is the process for this day and age, the Sankirtan Yajna. This is that process which is going to squeeze out every drop of blood in the form of, you know, sweat, anxiety, you know, and every type of possible emotion is going to come through the performance of Sankirtan Yajna. And not by any other method. You can sit and do a Vedic fire sacrifice and you might sweat, but you won't have any anxiety. And it won't draw out from you all that going out on Sankirtan will do. It's not the same. It is not the same. In this day and age, we have to understand what is the method. Just like Maharaj Pariksit, he did some horse sacrifices. You know, and you can do a horse sacrifice and probably put you in jail for being cruel to animals. You know, you'll get the ASPCA after you. He didn't just do one, he did three, right? How many did Maharaj Pariksit do? Yeah, three. See, you know, one, okay, maybe he didn't know better, but three times to kill a horse, lock him up. That's what they'll say. It's not practical. Neither you can give new life to that animal as Maharaj Pariksit and the Brahmins could do. All that you'll have is a big mess on your hands. Three slaughtered horses. You know, and it's very debatable that Krishna is going to be pleased by this activity. So, we have to understand what is that yajna. What is the sacrifice? How do we make things sacred in the present day and age? We have to make our life sacred. We have to make our mind sacred. You know, motivation is very important. Not just the motion, the action. You can be doing, you know, arti, just like I had one, you know, disciple for a while. And, you know, he was doing an arti. I had this deity of Krishna. And he was one of the first pujaris of the deity, you know. And one day I came in the room and he was doing the arti like this. First, and I was watching what he was doing. He, you know, so he had this long pointed, blade of grass. It was like, you know, sometimes you see these, it's not exactly grass, but they very sharp pointed type of plant. I know it's like it grows, you know, it's very long and sharp. Anyway, so he was doing, you know, like, and I said, what are you doing? It looked like he was trying to torture the deity. And he said, well, Krishna said, patram pushpam phalantam. You can offer me a leaf. And Anyway, the next time I came in, and he was again doing it. This time he'd given up doing that. He was actually, he got the idea that you should offer flour. But, unfortunately for him, you know, while he was doing the offering, the curtain was closed. And he was on the outside of the curtain. He wasn't behind the curtain. He was outside the curtain going like this. And I said, so-and-so, I think you forgot to open the curtain. And he went, oh, open the curtain. Anyway, needless to say, he's not in ISKCON today. The point I'm making is that the actions, you know, don't necessarily betray the consciousness. To get inside someone's consciousness, maybe they do. They do betray it, but we need to know what is the motive. That is what Krishna is seeing. What is the motive? Patram pushpan phalantoyam yome bhakti aprayajit. With bhakti, with devotion. So whatever you do, Krishna says, it's got to be for me. Whatever you do, you know, you may be laying bricks, or you may be, you know, pushing books. But either way, if you're not thinking of Krishna, and if you're not doing it with devotion, how will it produce prema bhakti? How will you come to the point of prema bhakti? So you have to see then, what is it that will draw from you that type of total dedication to the order of guru? Just like Maharaj Pariksit, he had a guru. So we must have a guru, and we must understand from our guru, how can I utilize my full energy in Krishna's service? And this is the necessity of a guru. The guru must appraise the nature of the individual disciple and recommend a suitable engagement which will absolutely tax to the max a disciple's energy. So that there's no energy left, you know, to offer to Kali, to Maya. One time I went to Prabhupada, I was so, you know, exhausted. And I told Prabhupada, nobody is assisting me. And Prabhupada said, oh, you're so lucky. I said, I am? I didn't realize I was so lucky. I thought that you were going to sympathize. And Prabhupada just kept laughing, and I was crying. And he said, yes, Arjuna was thinking in the same way as you are. He said, but actually, we should pray for this position, to be so engaged in Krishna's service that there is not a single opportunity for Maya to enter in. That is why we do Sankirtan. Because when you're out on Sankirtan, you're like, you know, in the middle of an ocean with so many dangerous sharks and big waves. And if for a single moment you're inattentive, man, you will be thrown out into the water. I had an experience recently in the Philippines. A big storm came up, and all the devotees were in this little boat, and it was just... I mean, these waves were huge, and they were coming right over the... What's the front of the boat? The stern or the bow? The bow. They were coming over the bow. And I was sitting up front. I mean, the water was just hitting my chest. And all these little kids were there, and the mothers were holding their kids. You know, and I was already thinking, you know, I'm going to have to, I may have to give up my life. I was already thinking, what am I going to do? If I get thrown over, I'm going to save these kids, because they're younger, at least they can live. But I was making my, and everybody was totally attentive. That's my point. Nobody was, you know, people were not spacing out. They were very, very attentive, because at any moment they could lose their life. Well, that's the way it is in Sankirtan. You better know it. You can space out more easily in a temple than you can on Sankirtan. At least I can say you can afford to space out in a temple. You know, if you space out here, you land up, if you got your eyes open, at least you'll be looking at a temple in Vrindavan or Mayapur or Bombay or one of these other places. You space out in an airport or you space out in a parking lot, there's quite a few other things to look at that are not so spiritual, unless you are very, very advanced. You know, if you can actually see the entire material manifestation as the energy of the Lord and see Krishna, very good. But that is the vision that we should see it with. Otherwise, what should we see when we're on Sankirtan? The order of our guru. was like Arjuna when they were training the Pandavas. What do you see? When they were training the Pandavas to shoot their arrows, what do you see? And Arjuna could only see one thing, the eye of the bird. That's all I see. I don't even see the bird. I see anything, I just see the eye of the bird. I don't see the tree. I don't see what's behind the tree. I don't even see the branches, the leaves, or the bird. I only see the eye of the bird. That's the focus that one has to have when they perform devotional service. The order of guru blazes in one's mind. Just like Prabhupada said, the order of his guru blazed in his mind. You read the Lilamrita, Lifetime in Preparation, just, you know, right through. There's such a good book. Satsarupa Maharaj wrote. The theme comes so strongly through the whole book, the order of guru in that volume. And how the order of guru propelled Prabhupada from 1922, you know, all the way to 1977. Just this order. Preach Krishna consciousness in the English language. So, we have to fix our mind. That order of our guru will take us right out of the material world. You don't have to do anything else. If you can, if you're a guru, you have a genuine guru, and he gives you the order of how to serve Krishna, you just have to absolutely dedicate yourself to fulfilling that order. And your spiritual life is guaranteed. Nothing else to do. Because this is the process. It is by the mercy of Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nakati. How do we get that mercy of Krishna? By the mercy, by the grace of Guru. When the spiritual master is pleased, Krishna is automatically satisfied and blesses you. Spiritual master also blesses. If we have equal faith in Guru and Krishna, then automatically all the imports of Vedic knowledge are revealed. Automatically. We should understand how to do bhakti. Maharaj Parikshit was touring. Here it mentions he went out to conquer. What did he go out to conquer? Not the kingdom, because they would already, he already had the kingdom. He went out to conquer any type of irreligious element that might dare to sprout itself in front of him. Otherwise, he already had. Now look at the present day so-called kings who are certainly like this Kali. You know, I mean, they are big demons. Big demons. And they're not just beating on one cow. They've got huge organizations that, you know, just beat and beat and beat the cow. We don't need the cows. Milk is bad for you to drink. We don't need the bull. We have machines. Don't worry about it. You can get this tape from somewhere. So many people take it. We don't need any of these things. That's all. What do we need? You know, practically they're like Frankensteins. Just plug me in. You know, just like, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, you know, did his machine and got, and then the big, you know, bolt of lightning came down and, you know, enlivened that hideous monster, and he started walking. Well, that's what they are. Walking monsters, you know, created by Kali. Slaughtering cows and, you know, harassing the devotees. Harassing the devotees. Sometimes you read about some of these governments. I've seen it. You know, they harass the devotees. Come in. I'm in one place where we're, I don't like to mention the name, but you know, where I go to preach sometimes. The government knew I was coming, arrested all the devotees 2 days before I got there, and they were so demonic. You know, came in with their video cameras, arrested everybody, and then told them, okay, now, we're going to film everything, give a class. And they made the devotees give the class while, you know, the police are filming, right? Can you imagine if you were in that position? You had to give a Bhagavatam class, knowing that they're filming so that they can imprison you. Then they said, now do the arti, we're going to film that. And they did everything, and took everything away and arrested all the devotees and took them away. These things are going on in this on this planet. You know, we're at least lucky that that hasn't happened yet here. But don't think it can't happen. Anything can happen. Because there's no Maharaj Pritchard to protect us. So, it is, you know, certainly a very dangerous time. And the only thing that we can hope to do is educate the public. And that's why the primary activity of this movement is to give education, to give knowledge to the people. We have to educate people. It is essential. At least, if some people become educated, they may demand of their leaders, you know, be a leader. I mean, now look at this U.S. presidential election. What a joke. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I remember the time when practically, you know, my parents were there, they didn't want to vote, but they did. But I was thinking, what is the point of voting for these? What choice do you have? You know, what is the choice? Which demon do you prefer? That's the choice. You know, which of the two is better? Which is the lesser of two evils? That's actually what the presidential election is. Which is the lesser of two evils? Now, we are not against voting, but we want to see someone worthy of voting for. You know, here's the example that, was it in this verse or the previous verse? The kings would give so much charity. All the taxes that were collected, where did they go? Right back in the form of benefits for the citizens. That's it. Nobody minded giving tax when you knew that you're going to get more than what you gave in return. The kings did not hold on to their wealth. They distributed it. Not now. In many countries of the world, there's only one reason you get elected is to make money. Everybody knows that. That's like the best business possible. Anyone who goes into office comes out a wealthy person. Many countries are like that. Most third world countries are like that. Why third world countries? How many major politicians are exposed, even in first and second world countries, for taking so much money? It's just, that's it. So where are exemplary persons? You know, like Maharaj Pritchard, who go on tour for the sake of the citizens, to protect them. Actually, we're doing that. We are doing that as devotees. We are practically going on tour. The Sankirtan devotees have to be, you know, they have to have a bit of Kshatriya spirit in them. Although, we want to train Brahmins, but practically, if you don't have a little Kshatriya spirit, it can be pretty dangerous out there. You know, you have to be a little bold and brave. You read what the qualities of a Kshatriya are. Most of our Sankirtan devotees have a little bit of those. You know, they don't like to run in the way in the battlefield. If a Brahmin sees, you know, a big, you know, menacing thing coming at him, what will the Brahmin do? Well, it depends how powerful the Brahmin is. But generally, they'll run. Or they'll talk their way out of it. Oh, I guess we'll do the same. We're not going to pull out a gun and shoot. We'll try to use our tongue. We'll be Brahmins also. But we won't run away in battle. Yude Chapiyapavaya, no, he doesn't run away in battle. So we don't run away in battle when we go out in Sankirtan and it gets tough. You know, we just become more determined. We like that challenge. Not that it should be easy. Krishna consciousness is a challenge. It's not easy. You know, sometimes the people say, well, if this is really the desire of God, then how come, you know, we're having so many problems? It is. Look at what happened in Bhaktivedanta Manor. It was a great victory for our movement. Great victory. Krishna could have, Krishna knows the past, present, and future. He could have told everybody, imagine if the deity one day spoke. We did speak on behalf of the deity. I mean, I don't say that I'm a mouthpiece for the deity or that I necessarily. I knew for sure we were going to win that campaign. I never had a doubt in my mind. And I said it many times when I would visit the manor, and I'm sure others did the same, other devotees who lectured there. Now I said that Krishna knows very, very well the past, present, and future, and he knows it, but he just wants our love to increase, and the way to increase love is to serve him. And so he's putting everybody into this position of total anxiety. And that's why we're all in anxiety for spreading Krishna consciousness, so that we can learn to love Krishna. So that we have an impetus. Otherwise, if it was all done, we're so passionate that, you know, there'd be nothing left for us to do. We would just wither away. Very, very few people are on such a spontaneous level that they can just serve Krishna out of pure love. We need a challenge. We need difficulty. We need opposition. So Krishna provides all of these simply to give us an impetus to increase our devotion, to make our prayers stronger, to strengthen our determination. This is Krishna's mercy, this opposition, to make us more prominent as representatives of Krishna. That's what Prabhupada said. Who knew about Krishna when he was living in Vrindavan? But as soon as he got on the battlefield, everybody knew about him. As soon as there were demons, people took note. When there's difficulty, when there's opposition, then there is prominence. So don't think that, you know, things will be easy and that's a sign of Krishna's favor. That's not the reading I get from the Bhagavatam. There's not an instance in the Bhagavatam of any great personality that doesn't face difficulty. Difficulty is the mercy of the Lord, as Kunti Devi said. Send more. You don't have to pray anyway, because you're dear to Krishna, so he will do it, whether you pray or not. People got the wrong conception. They want to make everything, you know, shanti, shanti, shanti. That's the common conception of what religion is for. Peace, peace. Yeah, well, that's not our religion. Our religion is fought on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Our religious scripture was spoken not in some sublime mountaintop retreat. Krishna didn't choose a mountaintop retreat. He chose a battlefield. And we're not going to make advancement in some mountaintop retreat. Not until you're free from the modes of material nature. And even then, well, then it'll be all right. But right now, if you go to a mountaintop retreat, you know, what will you do? You'll just become absorbed. Ah, goodness, goodness. Goodness gracious, that's so nice. This is so nice. How could I have ever lived all those years in Dallas? East Dallas, no less. Ah, this is so much nicer. Hawaii, or, you know, wherever you are. So much better. East Dallas. Well, that's where Krishna chose to sit down. He sits down in East Dallas. He sits down, you know, all kinds of places. I don't even want to say Brooklyn. I want him to sit in Manhattan. All right, Brooklyn. But I think he'll move again. I can't believe he's not going to move out of that place. Brooklyn, you know, Watsika Avenue. You know, wherever we are finding our deities, anywhere in the world, generally, they're in the midst of a battlefield. That just happens to be where God speaks religion. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, where the masses are teeming, you know, where the largest number of human beings are to be found, that's where you put down a temple, not on a mountaintop. You know, it's already difficult enough to be Krishna conscious. We don't have the luxury of locating temples on the top of a mountain so that the austerity that someone does, the entire austerity is just to get to the temple. Our austerity is to go out and preach, not to waste so much time getting to the temple. So we put the temples in a very convenient location. We go even further than that. We take the temples to the people in the form of these books, so that they can't even say, I didn't know you had a temple here. Well, you don't need to know. Here's the book. Now, you know, the temple has come to you. The deity has come to you, into your house. So now you cannot say when you stand in front of Yamaraj, I didn't know. No one told me there was a temple in Gurley Avenue. Oh yeah, well, maybe so, but remember that fellow who gave you a book? What book? I have so many books. No, try to remember. Oh, that book. I didn't even bother with that book. Well, you should have. That's why you're here today. Nobody can give an excuse. Our business is to put a book in every single person's hand on this planet so that no one will be able to go in front of Yamaraj and say, nobody told me about it. Nobody gave me a chance. Everyone should have that opportunity. And our book distributors should be so nice and sweet and convincing that not only do they buy the book, but they at least open it up, look at the pictures, read a few words, so that Yamaraj can go even one step further and say, now come on, remember that picture? You saw that picture in the fifth canto. Well, that was so horrible, I closed the book immediately. But we have, you know, this is the act of compassion, just like in Buddhism, this Lord Buddha. He had his transcendental realizations. But then he wanted to come and preach the Dharma. He wanted to preach Dharma out of compassion, just like our Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach Dharma out of compassion. He didn't sit in Vrindavan at 69 plus and almost 70 years of age. He didn't stay in Vrindavan and wait for liberation. Out of compassion, he got on a steamship. Out of compassion, he tolerated 2 heart attacks. Out of compassion, he tolerated, you know, the attack of a LSD freak. You know, out of compassion, he saved us. He saved us. And since he saved us, what are we going to do to repay that act of compassion? Just get saved? Just save ourselves? Is that all we're going to do? Or are we going to try to... I will stop here and ask if there's any comments or questions. Navina. In our mind.
In mind, and it's also in the institution. What is your advice to counteract that? Because we can see the opposite.
Yes, my advice is that anybody who is getting opposition from their institution should move to Dallas. You won't get any opposition here. We have not asked our book distributors to give a penny to maintain this institution in I don't know how many years. All I got to do is distribute books. And, of course, make their van payments. And give a little guru dakshin. I haven't got any. I just want them to make the van payments. But that's all they got to do is maintain themselves and distribute books. We should try to set up our society in such a nice way that those who are grihastas who are not doing book distribution and those who are congregational members, they should maintain the temples. That's how I set this place up from the beginning. It's been set up like that from 15 years like that. It's always been set up that way. The brahmacharis and the brahmacharis, they never had to maintain this temple. They don't need this temple. They can go out and travel and preach. They need it for their spiritual benefit, but they're children and they're maintained by the householders. Temples maintained by the householders. So if we set up the institution in such a way that it's household, we don't have to reinvent the public. Who wants to join a movement like that? Or the devotees are not knowledgeable. Or the devotees are frustrated. Or the devotees are not advanced. Who wants to join a movement like that? There's plenty of religions in the world to choose from, you know. You know, you look at what every airline says. We thank you for giving us your business. We know you had others, you know, that you could have chosen to fly by. Well, so you think we're the only religion in the world. Wake up. There's a lot of churches. Prabhupada said America is a country, a nation of churches, and the same can be said for practically every country. In Europe, Australia, there are so many churches. We're not the only business going. So we better be good. If we're not really good at what we're doing, you take a look at the demographics and you'll see which religions are increasing in number. May not be that we're in front right now. Now you should think, why? If you say we got the best philosophy, if you say that we have the best food, we certainly have the best and almost the only deity worship. You know, we've got everything, but somehow we're not increasing. Now you better think, why? I'm not going to blame the deities. I don't think that they're doing anything wrong. Look at them. Looks like they're covering their act pretty well. So if we're going to blame anyone, we have to blame ourselves. We don't blame anything else. Don't blame Prabhupada. Nobody could have done, no earthly person could have done what Prabhupada did in 10 years. You cannot blame Prabhupada. He did, you know, he did enough for 100 Prabhupadas. If Prabhupada had done 1/100th of what he did, he would have still been Prabhupada. But Prabhupada is 100 Prabhupadas. So you can't blame Prabhupada and you can't blame the deities. And we can start making a list of who we can't blame, and you'll see what's left. It's only going to be me left on the list. To start with ourselves, how much more I could be doing to be a better devotee, and you'll start to, you know, you'll start to make a difference in people joining the Krishna consciousness. If every devotee starts to think, how can I be better? Then the movement will spread. One better person, Prabhupada, did it all. You get a bunch of people, like Prabhupada said, some moons, you know, then there'll be lots of light. There'll be no sleep. It'll be like Sweden. The sun doesn't set. Wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and the sun is still out there. And that was my experience. One time I went to Sweden, you know, somehow I woke up in the middle of the night and that blazing disc was right outside my window. Buried my head in the pillow and thought I was a nightmare. Another question? Maharaj.
At one point you said that the disciple, he surrenders to the spiritual master and then he makes his life perfect. Yesterday we were discussing a group of devotees. If a disciple, due to his free will, he has a different desire that the spiritual master has, should the disciple try to satisfy his own desire?
That is not a very good situation. If a disciple has a different desire than the spiritual master has instructed, should he try to satisfy or she try to satisfy his or her own desire? I think that they have to negotiate, first of all, with their guru. They better go into some negotiations. And if the negotiations break down, they better do arbitration. Third-party arbitration. In other words, if you set yourself up, you know, as a separate entity from your guru, you know, then you fall into the category of what Prabhupada said. His spiritual whereabouts are unknown. Now you think about that phrase. And sometimes Prabhupada would say that. Where is so-and-so? His spiritual whereabouts, when someone left the womb, Prabhupada would say, his spiritual whereabouts are unknown. It's like, you know, when they ask, someone's missing, right? A person's, you know, missing, materially speaking, missing. They say, their whereabouts are unknown. Prabhupada said, their spiritual whereabouts are unknown. How are you? Where's your connection to Krishna? What is that meaning? My guru told me to do one thing, but I have a different desire of how I want to serve Krishna, and I'm fulfilling that. Really? You may think you're doing that, but But could you show me what the connection is between you and Krishna? I mean, where is the connection? And either your guru is a guru and is your guru, or he's not a guru or he's not your guru, but when a guru says something and you say, I'm going to ignore that because I've got a better plan or better idea, you're not a disciple. You're not a disciple anymore. Simple as that. So, I don't think that a guru is callous or deaf to a disciple's desires. I think a disciple should have the right to express his or her desire to the guru. That's what, I mean, it's like the disciple is like a child, and the guru is like a father. Until we have mother gurus, then they'll be like mothers, if we have them. But right now, it's like a father. Guru is like a father. So you mean to say that the child doesn't have access to the father? The child should be able to express openly, Daddy, this is what I want to do. And the child should also have enough love and trust that after hearing everything very nicely, the father will consider and say, my dear child, that is nonsense. That's not a very good idea. Because of this, this, and this, and this. Well, you're right about all those things, but I don't care, I just want to do it. Then Prabhupada says his next statement of Prabhupada, a very common statement, what can be done? If they say that, if they maintain this or this position, then what can be done? Prabhupada, many letters, Prabhupada, then what can be done? That means, you know, what can we do? I can't do anything about it. It doesn't seem that Krishna can either.
Another point that we discuss is that the child, he grows up one day. So
the child grows up. I haven't come to that point, and I'm 50 years old, and I still haven't grown up. I still think the same way, that if Prabhupada doesn't approve it, I want to know what Prabhupada... My one anxiety is to know what it is that Prabhupada wants me to do. I tell you, it's really... You will see the dilemma, you see. Most of you have your gurus present in this world, and you don't have to face this dilemma, what does my guru want me to do? You can ask your guru. Of course, many people who have a guru on this planet they do have this dilemma. I wish I could please my guru. That's all right, but what about, I wish I knew what would please my guru. I think most gurus are pretty explicit. Or maybe you don't want to ask your guru. Another thing is that a guru can't really always say, you know. It's like someone is in prison, right? The kid is in prison, and he says, but from, you know, his father comes to visit him, right? He's in prison, and he's, you know, he's standing there with the bars like this, and he says, I just want to do what will please you. He's in prison, right? And he's leaning his chin on the bars like this. You know, I just want to do what will please you. And he's in prison. So let us understand also that, you know, for a lot of devotees, they're so entangled in the modes of material nature that it's practically like, you know, they're tied the hands of their guru. The guru can't tell them what will please them. If you're so entangled in the material energy, you know, and you say, Gurudev, just tell me, you know, I'll do whatever you want to please you. And the guru's looking, and you're in prison. And you're saying, I'll do whatever you want. And the guru is not such a, you know, he understands that you're not in a position to do whatever you want. You're so much in the mode of passion, or you're so much in the mode of ignorance, or you're so much attached to the mode of goodness, you're not in a position yet to do whatever I want. Prabhupada said, if all my disciples would give me their full cooperation, he said that we could take over the world in 18 days. He made that statement. That means the Bhagavad Gita took, battle of Kurukshetra took 18 days for the Pandavas to win. Prabhupada said we could take over the world in 18 days if everyone would give me their cooperation. But we're not able to. Not able to. That is the difficulty. So it's not always that the guru can express himself clearly. You know, what's the use of frustrating a disciple who's incapable because of entanglement in so many ways to actually please their guru? So the guru has to, very often the guru's instructions are not final, absolute, or you know, ideal. They're practical. Practical instructions. Practical, considering the circumstance. This is the best they can hope to get, to give the disciple, the best instruction possible under the circumstances. So don't always think that what your guru is telling you is exactly what he wants you to do. It may be what he wants you to do at the moment, considering all the circumstances. Which isn't bad, because you got to start from where you are. You got to work out of the position you're in. There's no use being so idealistic that you think, you know, yeah, you got to go from A to B to C to D. You don't just try to go from A to D. You got to get there by stages, incremental stages. All right, one Mataji had her hand. Kamalini. Then I'll call you. Rasamanda, I'll call you next. Yes, Kamalini. Yeah.
Well, sometimes devotees are just working in the temple, but they're also getting paid for that. And I was wondering that you also spoke a lot about our motives, checking on motives for bhakti. Could there be a danger that it would interfere with sentiments of devotion and getting a salary or a service?
The principle should be that if you are working in a temple, that you accept the bare minimum wage for keeping body and soul together and nothing more. Anyone who is employed by the temple should be prepared to live under extremely austere and simple conditions. And if they don't like it, they should go out and get a job. This is how you will make the motive of a devotee working in the temple. It will help to make the motive purified. Keep the maintenance of anyone who takes money in the temple to a bare minimum. Now, if we can make our temple so well planned that everybody can be engaged in the temple and derive their maintenance from it, that's ideal. That's very intelligent planning. If the management of the temple is so good, and get this point because I want you to get it really clear. If the temple management is so good, there are different ways to set things up. But if the temple management, mostly what I see is that the temples are running at a loss, and the loss is covered by the profits from Sankirtan. Now, that's all right. That may be okay. But the problem is that it places pressure on the Sankirtan devotees. It places an unnecessary and undue pressure that they have to get so much money for the books that they can't give out the books. That may be a problem. But that's not the problem, and there's lots of extra profit from the Sankirtan devotees. Very good. They should give all that money to the temple. That's very good if they can make profit easily. But if we have to give out less books, many, many less books, because we need so much money to cover the overhead of the temple, then what business did you have having such a temple? Prabhupada said you could close the doors of the temple to go out in Sankirtan. He told me that person. He said, you can close the doors of the temple. You can lock the temple doors to go out in Sankirtan. Sankirtan is more important, he said. And that doesn't mean we're going to neglect the deity's service, but it does mean that we should understand what our priorities are. So if the Sankirtan book means the number of books paid for, which are sold on the street, if those numbers get so reduced because the temples are draining money, because of high overheads, there's a problem in management. Then we have to investigate why it is that there's so many devotees in the temple. Then we may see. How many devotees do you think it takes to maintain a temple? I don't think it takes that many. First of all, as far as I see, anyone as a householder should be engaged in deity worship some of the time. So most of the deity worship should not be maintained by people having to be paid for it. You should just pay for a few, one or two or three pujaris just to make sure, but a lot of it can be done by others. We have to analyze the each department that it's self-maintaining. It should be self-supporting as far as possible. Departments should make this movement, you know, this is Kali Yuga, we got to make money to live properly. I just think that most people, if they live on a bare minimum, won't want to live that way. But then if they don't, they must go out and work. We cannot support anyone's sense gratification from public donations. So anyone who lives in a temple community maintained by the temple must live on a very frugal budget. Yeah.
Doesn't that prophet's formula that 50%, you know, the cost of the book should be doubled, and then half of that is to be paid in half from the
beginning? Very good. Then do that. I still maintain my point. You'll still have problems doing it. It's not so easy to do that.
Most of us have only very few same kind of things, not like that.
So it's not so easy. We couldn't maintain this temple by our sankirtan devotees. That's why I didn't try to do it from the beginning. We can't maintain this temple. And this temple is down to its bare minimum in terms of maintenance costs. We can't maintain it by the sankirtan devotees. I think it's... Everything will be... Just understand this point. Whoever takes money from the temple must take the bare minimum. And beyond that, the temple may not even be able to give support to anyone who wants the bare minimum. That's the next point. If you say... Okay, I want the bare minimum given to me. Then we have the right to say, we don't need you. Go out and get a job. Or go out on sankirtan. I mean, how many people do you need? How many people do you need? One person could clean the whole temple. One pujari, hire one pujari, you know, one temple cleaner. That's it. One administrator, boss. Three people hired. Everybody else go out and get money, somehow or other.
So you're considering Kalachandi's business?
That's a restaurant. So it is. It maintains those people and it pays rent.
I know some of them live in ashram and don't pay any rent and they get food.
Well, I think that we should, you know, that's why I don't take part in the administration here anymore. If I did, people's heads would be rolling. I'm not in charge of this place administratively. I must tell you that, frankly. I'm just speaking ideals. As to what goes on here, you can talk to the administrators. You can't talk to me anyway. I don't know those details. But I wouldn't let that happen. I wouldn't let that happen. I would not let someone live in an ashram and get a good amount of money if they don't need it. I wouldn't do that. To me, you have to be, you know, you have, the principles have to govern the decisions. And I think that if you preach strongly to the individuals, then they'll come to that standard. But I don't know the details about what is exactly going on in every place.
Maharaj, I'd like to return to the point you made previously about following the word of the Guru. And actually, I agree that one must follow the word of the Guru. I feel quite strongly in favor of developing initiative. But it may seem a little contradictory if we encourage initiative amongst disciples. It seems to be quotes from Srila Prabhupada saying that the disciple, we want self-reliant, resourceful devotees. So there may seem to be a contradiction. How does the Guru respond when he sees initiative? And by initiative, I mean the devotee comes along and says, I really want to do book distribution. Where I really want to do deity worship, and it's within the bounds of the order of the Guru, and yet it is their own desire.
I don't see any contradiction. I don't see any contradiction between a disciple's initiative and a Guru's order. If a disciple is a genuine disciple, then I would expect that by the mercy of the Guru, they got that initiative. Where did you get your initiative? Initiative, you got it directly from Krishna? I don't think we get anything directly from Krishna. I think we get it by the mercy of our Guru. So the Guru should not be so faithless that he doesn't think the possibility is there that the words that come from his disciples' mouth are not indeed being inspired by Krishna, by the grace of Guru. I think that's... I would suggest that half the time or more a Guru's order is based on a disciple's initiative. What does initiative mean? What is the basis of a disciple's initiative? He's going to base his actions or her actions on the basis of guna and karma. Because I have such and such qualities, and because I'm involved in that, this is what I want to do. It's the very same thing. The order of the guru and the initiative of the disciple are one. I don't think that generally they will conflict. And if they do, that's where the disciple has a problem. In fact, a good teacher, what does a good teacher do? A good teacher lets the student say it. A good teacher makes the student give the answers. A good teacher doesn't give the answers. A good teacher makes the students give the answers. So a good guru lets the order come out of the mouth of the disciple. They won't preempt the disciple's words. They'll let the disciple come to the maturity where the disciple say, I think I should do such and such, and say, oh, let me think about that. But actually, that was what the guru wanted all along. Why does he say, let me think about it? Because he wants to make sure that this disciple who took so long to finally come to the point of realizing it will hold to it. He said, well, let me think about that. All that means is to increase the disciple's determination. Yeah, that's the way. Gurus don't just sit there with a Rolodex, you know, file system with a, let's see all the things I got to have done. Okay, I'll get this person to do this and this person, you know. I think it works that way. Another principle of good management is never compromise a person's spiritual advancement for the purpose of managerial necessity. That's another principle. Always followed here. That whatever is best for the disciple's advancement, engage them in that way. Never mind whatever the response or whatever the apparent reaction will be on the temple. Have faith that if a disciple is properly advancing in spiritual life, automatically our movement will thrive. Have that faith. Otherwise, there's no hope to Krishna consciousness for anybody, including the institution. What is the use of such an institution? Not that we manipulate people because we need something, managerial necessity requires, Prabhu, that you get married. But I don't want to get married. I want to be a brahmachari. Well, Prabhu, we have 17 brahmacharinis. You have to get married. But I don't want to. Have not been able to do book distribution specifically because of the need for money. That's what disturbs me. That's the point I was trying to address when I said that I feel that it's like if anyone who joins this movement, I do not believe that the first thing that a devotee should feel when they come into this movement is I have to maintain this movement. Don't expect a small child to understand that. That comes later. First thing is to, you know, let them get nourished and build up their strength. Then automatically they'll want to get money to support this movement. You know, just like Velasini, she met some, you know, now she's a Sankirtan devotee. She met someone in Chicago, and the guy said, you know, I just want to do something. How many, you know, do you have some books? She said, we have some books. We'd like you to buy some books. How many? You know, what did you say? 32 cases. She told him, buy 32 cases of books. The guy said, I'll buy 16, right? Bang, 16 cases of books sold. But I don't think someone in the beginning would think that way. It wouldn't even come in their mind. That will come. The time will come when we will think clearly how to get more and more Lakshmi. And Prabhupada wanted to know about how much Lakshmi there was. Every day when we would go on Sankirtan in Los Angeles, every night, Prabhupada would lecture 3 nights a week. And every night, the lecture, before he would start the lecture, Prabhupada would ask me for the report about each devotee's Sankirtan. And he didn't want to know how many books only. He said, I want to know how many books and how much Lakshmi. Both things. So as we make advancement, we naturally want to get double the money for the book. But it's not always possible. That is a fact. It's not always possible, but it can be done. But even that, with the number of devotees, may not bring in sufficient funds. Therefore, I say that as far as possible, we should only engage devotees in the temple that are really necessary, and the rest should go out who don't want to do Sankirtan and bring in money. What's the problem? That's what the whole world's doing. When Prabhupada saw Satsarupa Maharaj, what did he say? Oh, you're a responsible man. You have a job. Didn't he? That's what it says. Right? You're a responsible person. You have a job. That's the first thing I told these grihasthas. Everybody go out and work. And they liked that. And they didn't become spiritually independent because the order of guru told them to go out. They always remained. They were financially independent, but spiritually dependent. Whereas in most temples, they would not let the householders go out and work. And when they did, they said, oh, you blooped. You're in Maya. So naturally, they just became spiritually independent as a result of that. But I didn't do that. I ordered them, please go out and make money and support this community. So they thought, this is the order of my guru. They remain spiritually dependent, but financially independent. A householder should be financially independent. Dependent, just go and beg and get a very small maintenance and beg money from the president. Very hard. Very few people can actually do that and really be peaceful and brahminical. If they can, those persons should be given that opportunity, if you can use them. And if not, they should go to another place where they can support them. But our movement is not so well off that we can support that many Brahmins. That's our misfortune right now. We're still a young movement. We can't support a lot of Brahmins. So it's a mistake. You know, you get these communities where they're trying to support 30, 40 Brahmins. Where's the money? Go on Sankirtan and bring it in. That's what they tell the Brahmacharis. Go on Sankirtan. We need money. We have so many Brahmins. And don't you know Brahmins are supposed to be supported? Well, I'm a Brahmin too. The Sankirtan devotees. What kind of that?
With that statement.
Are you happy with my statements, Mother Kamala? Now, can you tell me what the problem is so that I can address it? Because I'm getting the vibes.
You know, in Denver, we hear it's like everybody's making like a temple. And I'm thinking, like, if somebody was to go out independently and work, then we create others who desire that. I mean, you know, I agree, it's very difficult for me. My husband, it's easy. You know, we get $10 a week each person, plus, you know, on the board. So it's like you say, very minimal. But, you know, just. I'm just trying to think of how everyone can be satisfied with that.
With the $10 a week? Huh?
Yeah, like what will happen if people, like you say, they're not satisfied, they should.
They should go out and work?
Yeah. But then you lose, like you say, they're still spiritually dependent, but I don't see it very much. Generally.
That's because they don't have strong connection with Guru. That's the problem. They don't have strong connection with the Guru. I live here. And I always had a strong presence here. So the disciples, when they go out, they always feel that we're connected with our guru. They have a direct connection with their guru. It's very direct. It's not this guru's far, far, far away and they can't feel the connection. And they're dealing with their guru.
And very often, just nothing left over to donate to the temples. You know,
that's a that is great misfortune. That is very unfortunate for a grihastha. If they go out and work and they have nothing left over to maintain with, that means they're living on too high a standard. That's what that means. A grihastha that goes out and work and doesn't donate to the temple, it means they're living on too high a standard. However, I will tell you what Prabhupada said. When I brought this up to him in 1977 in Bombay, it was about New York, and I wanted all the grihasthas to get out of New York and to be supported on their own. And they should give 50%. And I read the letter to Prabhupada as the secretary. I wrote the letter. Prabhupada stopped it. He said, don't write that letter. He said, if they will just maintain themselves and not divorce, I would be happy. He said, if they'll just maintain their families, I'll be satisfied. So, ideally, they should give charity. I say any householder that goes out and works and can't donate to the temple should feel very, very bad. And they should be scrutinizing themselves to see, maybe I'm just... In other words, what I think they should do is live at a much simpler standard. So they can donate money. Otherwise, what is the use of being... You know, if you're a householder and you can't donate money, you're in a very unfortunate position. Unless you're giving, like you and your husband, you're giving your life. If they can't give their life like that, at least give their money. Money, right? That's the next to life, that's the best. better than words, better than intelligence is money. In order, according to Shastra, if you put it in order, it's the next thing before the life is money. If they have a strong connection with Guru, then they can do it. They can go out and work, and they won't be spiritually independent. At least that's our experience. I haven't seen practically anyone that goes out and works, and it doesn't make them spiritually independent. I don't find them. In fact, they take more shelter sometimes. Some people can't fix their mind on temple activities or sankirtan. They've got in work, and suddenly they're peaceful, and they remember Krishna. Therefore, guna karma vibhagasha. You have to engage a person according to guna and karma. Another point is that every temple community is different. Because I'm here, this temple can run this way. Because maybe it's different in Denver, you have to set it up differently. I do not recommend necessarily that a particular arrangement for one place will work in another. I don't believe that you can standardize these systems. Each place has to figure out a system that will work for it, based on the nature of the devotees there, the setup of different gurus and disciples there, the nature of the city, the nature of the congregation. You go to Europe, there's not any Indian congregation. You go to Chicago, there's a huge Indian congregation. You can maintain a Chicago temple on the donations from the Indian community. You can't maintain the Zurich temple on the donations from the Indian community. There aren't any. Or there are, but they're not many. So you can't make the same system. It won't work. Just like here, you have grihasthas who are maybe different than the grihasthas in Denver. They may have been brought up in a different way. So you cannot just say, what works here will work there. It may not. But we can learn from each place. We should learn from each place and extract and adapt those things which are suitable to where we're working. Certainly we can learn from every place something. We may go to Denver and see there's more dedication, there's more purity, there's more simplicity. And people from here should learn that. But so far I have seen, grihasthas become somewhat humiliated when they have to beg money from the temple management. But that I don't want to see. That's what I could explain why I did things the way I did them. Most of what I set up here is based on my experience of having been brought up in India. My 4 years of my training were in India, and I watched the whole grihastha scene there. Not in ISKCON. I watched Indian society, and it works. So I just set up what I saw there. I had a different background. My background was, sannyasis and brahmacharis live in the temple, householders live outside and support the temple. That's the way I saw it. 4 years in a row in India. That's why I came back here and I was fanatical about the Radha Dhamma Party. That's why I preached the way I did. Because I just preached what I saw in India. And I didn't see householders living in the temple. Now, Prabhupada did set things up differently. I don't deny that. So I've changed my preaching. I didn't keep preaching that way. I've changed. I adjusted it after, Prabhupada chastised me. I adjusted it. But I adjusted it up to the limit of, okay, those who are Brahmins can be supported. Those who are Brahmins who will live very frugally, they should be. But I cannot accommodate the idea of supporting people luxuriously on charitable donations. To me, that will, wreak havoc in the devotee who takes that money's life. And it will cheat the public. And it causes envy amongst the devotees. So anyone who takes money from the temple should take bare minimal, nothing more. And if they can't handle it, nobody's forcing them to stay there. And if we are principled, really strong principles like this, I think our movement will improve so much. Yes?
Maharaj, I was going to ask you, what attitudes should the brahmacharis have towards household life? I'm thinking in terms of making money. I've seen that many brahmacharis have a kind of disdain for household life.
I don't know how anybody can have a disdain for household life. The householders, that means they're biting the hand that feeds them. Any brahmachari that has a disdain for household life is a dog biting the hand of the master who feeds him. The householders are the parents. They are supporting and maintaining and feeding, and you're disdainful of them? On what grounds? How can you be disdainful of your parents? I can't imagine that. They should be, you know, the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis should be an object of affection of the householders. The householders should love the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis and take care of them and give them gifts and take all good care of them. Then I want to see who will be disdainful. With no brahmachari. If the householders care for the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, then the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis will not behave that way. But if the householders just think, you're not my son or daughter, this is my son or daughter that came from my womb, that popped out of my womb. That is my daughter, that is my son. But you are not, you are some stranger. I don't think that way. What physical connection do I have with my disciples? But I think that they're my children, and I have to maintain them. And now that I'm old, they got to maintain me. Fortunately. That's why I tell them, I paid my dues. I tell disciples who joined recently and became my disciples, I said, I'm sorry, you got an old father. And now you get raised by your older brothers and sisters and you maintain me. I'm ready to be maintained now. Yeah, you're an illusion. You're one of these disciple zombies. Under the impression, but actually you're all maintaining me. I get maintained by my disciples. But there was a long time when I, did it the other way around. So I say that the householders should think that they are my children and they should look after and maintain them. Give them what they need. At least maintain the temple. That's when I said maintain. What I really mean is don't burden them with maintaining this movement. Just let them preach. Free them from preaching. Completely free them from preaching. And encourage all new people who join this movement. Preach, preach, preach. As long as you can, preach. Does that sound right, Navina? Is it? Oh, very good. Make a copy of the tape and send it around. And send me a commission. It's negotiable. Let's see the sales. Any other questions? Maharaj.
You talked a little bit about prema. Explain how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so kind and he gave prema so freely to us. So we are accepting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we see that actually this is very, cursed a lot of austerity and knowledge. And
okay, what's your question?
To get this prema. So it doesn't seem that so easy, so free, he gives so freely.
I think it's pretty free. When you think about all of the sins that we have done in this lifetime and past lifetimes, if in 100 births from now we get prema, I think it was pretty free and easy. If you consider how totally disqualified we are, that we should not even be able to talk about Lord Chaitanya right now, considering the abominable activities that we performed in this lifetime that we can remember performing, what to speak of what we can't remember, and yet we're able to say Chaitanya and Nityananda and chant Hare Krishna, and one day even think about getting prema, pretty free and easy as far as I can see. That's my answer. Considering our disqualification, anytime we get it. Who was that devotee? Tell him he can't see me for how many births was it? 60,000 years was it? Or 60,000? He can't see me. And then who was that devotee? And then he became... Huh? Mukunda, right? Is it Mukunda? And then Mukunda said, oh, you mean there'll be a time when I can see him? And he began to dance. It's like that. What is easy? Easy means, if there's ever a foreseeable future when it will come, that is easy, considering what we have done. I mean, when all the sins that we have done and all of our repentance is simply to chant Hare Krishna, sing and dance and take prasadam and do some sankirtan? I mean, we should be in jail. How many cows were killed? You know, every hair on the body of a cow, you're supposed to take birth in hell. If all of that is vanquished by one time sincerely chanting Hare Krishna, that's not easy and free? Man, I think Lord Chaitanya is still giving it out, still dishing out the mercy freely and easily. If all the cows that we, you know, I don't want to get into it, but let's not remember our pasts and what we were eating and what that represents and what the Shastra says is the reaction for killing a cow. And eating a cow is the same as killing a cow. And what should be the reaction for that? And one time sincerely chanting is supposed to obliterate all of that. That sounds pretty free to me. Doesn't it? I mean, we should be pretty grateful. Okay, time to end the class. Thank you for your patience. Kamalini, mother, are you all right? Did I cover everything all right at the end? But I said, everything has to be adjusted to the place, time, place, and circumstance. I really am a proponent of that point. I never recommend to people. I naturally get enthusiastic about what we're doing here, so it sounds like I'm recommending it. But the fact is, if you ever try to duplicate what's being done in any one place, it'll fail in another place. It cannot be duplicated. But you can learn some things. But if you try to duplicate, the biggest mistake places make, if they ever try to make a system, you know, let's have a meeting and we'll make a system of that'll work everywhere. That's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely. Let's get many models. I think that's better. What we should do is as many temples there are that many models. Make each place a model. That you should do. Make it model. Make it work. That's why Prabhupada said, we're not in favor of communism or capitalism. Because either one of them can work in Krishna consciousness. Either one of them can work. So that you can have if there's 300 temples in this movement, you can have 300 working models. Now make each model perfect. Then we print out the blueprint of what each model is, and then everybody can read and learn, oh, that would work here. Oh, I'll take, you know, this or that. That'll work here. And it gets better and better. That's a very good intelligent point. But to try and just duplicate, that's really can never, ever work. You can't do, I don't duplicate in Houston what we're doing in Dallas. Can't be duplicated. It's a different situation. And that's only, you know, 100, 200 miles away. Jai. Sankirtan Yagna Ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
Gaur Bhaktarinda Ki.
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi.
Jai.
See, Gaur Premanandi.